Hello, party people. It is a beautiful Sunday here in the backyard in Las Vegas. Nice, peaceful temperatures here, although I don't get to enjoy it too much today. Our house is actually for sale, and there's a couple of showings today. So after this finishes, I got to go finish tidying up the backyard and get it ready before we head out for the day. It's perfect because there's a bunch of car shows in Vegas today. I mean, there are car shows in Vegas most days, I think. It's a really good car-friendly city. There's all kinds of car shows every weekend. There are even two Facebook groups just dedicated to car shows. One that's for like regularly scheduled car shows and events. And then another one that's for, and there's usually 15 or 20 a month. And then another one just for ad hoc car shows where people will get together and just say, hey, we're going to go get together in our Hondas tonight at, you know, such and such restaurant. And people will show up in the parking lot and just hang out and have a good time. It's really wild how car focused this city is. And it's better, I think, than Los Angeles. Los Angeles has a similar car culture, but there's so much traffic in LA, it's really hard to get anywhere. Whereas Vegas, if you spend 30 minutes in a car in Las Vegas, it's because you went from one end of the city to the other. There's just so many highways here, so much highway capacity. So let's go hit your top voted questions before I go hop in the car. Simon Fraser asks, I'm curious to know if partitioned views are still used much. How often do you see these out in the wild? Simon, I don't know that I ever saw them very much out in the wild. It was something that we would tell people, hey, if you're using partitioning, you should probably consider this feature instead. I don't think I ever in my life saw partitioned views in a place where I hadn't suggested them first. So extremely rare. And I think I maybe suggest it once or twice a year, tops. I couldn't tell you the last, that's not true. I can tell you exactly the last time I did it. It was probably about turn of the year, probably around January. But before that, it's been a really long time. And it just doesn't get any marketing because that feature was from SQL Server 2000. It just works. It's worked for decades. It works exactly the same way. Yeah. Confined Lake 41 says, do you have any words of wisdom when moving SQL Server on-premises to SQL Azure? Yes, and I have so much of it that I've gathered it together in a course. If you go to brentozar.com, click training up at the top, there's a class on running SQL Server in AWS and Azure. Go check that out. STDBA says, I once heard about using Resource Governor for monitoring only. Have you ever seen this done in practice? Yes, but also, it's the same as the partitioned views answer I gave a minute ago. I've only seen it in places where I actually suggested it. I don't mean to say that I'm the only person who suggests it. I am not. But it tends to take a pretty specialized consultant to have that idea rather than just people don't seem to come up with it on their own because it's fairly unusual to see. So I've never seen it in the wild other than places where I recommended it to solve specific use cases. Craig asks, I'm running SP Blitz first every 15 minutes to collect metrics. My problem is that sometimes it runs for over 10 minutes and I don't want it to affect other processes. Does it have an impact on the server? Well, of course, any query has an impact on the server, right? Any query that you run has an impact on the server. If performance on the server is important to you, go buy a third-party monitoring tool. There are tons of third-party monitoring tools that all cost around $1,000 per monitored instance. Those things have been performance-tuned much more than the open-source first responder kit. I just don't focus on performance-tuning that because it's not a high priority for me. If you want to focus on performance tuning the first responder kit, we would love to have your pull requests by all means. But if otherwise, if you're just looking to quickly get something high performance monitoring on the server, go buy a third party tool. That's what they're for. Next up, Chris says, when I was younger, I had more time on my hands than ideas on to use it. Now I find that I have more that I want to do than I have time for. His question continues, but I got to stop and say that Adam Savage, of formerly of MythBusters, now of Tested, has a great explanation on this, where he talks about when you're young, time is cheap and materials are expensive. When you're old, time is expensive and materials are cheap, and you look at it as you would gladly buy stuff that will give you more time that you would never do when you were younger. Chris's question is, did you have a hard time deciding to move away from production DBA work, and do you have any advice for making difficult decisions on to give something up? It was, I gave up production DBA work around, I want to say it was around the year of 2017 when SQL Server on Linux came out, where I was, and especially availability groups on Linux. I was like, the troubleshooting tools aren't getting any easier. Production DBA work is often about breaking and fixing. Like, something broke in the middle of the night and you have to respond immediately. I don't really want to be on call. I don't want to be competing for emergency work because the system is down. When the system is down, customers will take whoever is first available, regardless of their qualifications or cost. So you're competing with much cheaper people for much worse work that has to be done when they want it to. Whereas performance tuning work, you tend to be able to focus on 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Will people have performance emergencies over a weekend? Sure, but that's much less frequent. People are usually like, all right, now how do we hire a consultant to make that go away for next time? So for me, it was all about, how do I plan my income more strategically? And performance tuning was more strategic for me. But you asked, do I have any advice on making difficult decisions on what to give up? So the best thing I can tell you is get the book Getting Things Done by David Allen. It's an old book. It's cliched. You don't have to read the whole thing. Read the first half and stop there. When he starts talking about using folders, give it up. But there are a lot of important lessons in that book around, you should set a time box for your daytime work. Like, whatever's paying you, like your Monday through Friday 9 to 5 job, you should set a time box on that. And then at the end of the day, you need to go take care of your personal life, your family, your health, your loved ones, all that kind of stuff. And when somebody asks you, hey, I need you to stay late, you can say, honestly, I have a commitment at this time. They don't need to know the specifics of what the commitment is. They don't know that you've got a time set aside because you've got to go work out or because you have to make your partner a happier person. But say, I've got a commitment at this time. For me to do what you're asking me to do, I would have to cancel a commitment that I'm not comfortable telling you about. Tell me how important this is, and I'm going to have to take time tomorrow morning away instead so that I can go take care of that other thing. Like, this is where comp time starts to come into play. You're going to find that some jobs don't value that. Some jobs don't value your time. And that's where you've got to start being more strategic too, about who do you really want to work for. It's tricky. Evan says, besides that, going from like a completely professional development question over to a completely technical question, like totally switching gears, Evan asks, besides using more disk space, are there any gotchas with increasing the retention period for CDC? I have no idea. What I would ask is what's the problem that you're trying to solve? Do you find that are you trying to go longer and longer periods of time without polling CDC to get the data that you need? Why is that? Why don't you poll more frequently instead of less frequently to avoid that problem? If you find that, if you're like, well, sometimes I want to go back in time and see what changed, then don't use CDC. Use something more permanent, like temporal tables, where they just simply add more space inside the user database, and you can control when those are purged out. You can run deletes against them. Northwind asks, hi Brent, is there a way to automatically trigger a stored procedure or a SQL script right after a database is restored? No, that would be something that you would have to do. A lot of third-party backup tools do provide it. If I remember right, we've got in SP Database Restore, for example, there is a parameter to run a stored procedure right after the database is restored. And I know I've seen third-party backup products for like that replace the native backups in SQL Server, stuff like Quest, Redgate, and Idira that do offer that option. So check into the backup tool that you're using. Adrian says, do you have any plans for future videos regarding working with people, like in development environments? I find your talks about working with customers and colleagues really reach the same issues or challenges I sometimes find myself in, and I would really like to hear more. No, because they don't make money. So I have to make tough judgments about what I spend time on, like how much time I'm willing to do stuff for free versus how much time I'm willing to pay the bills, frankly. Now, as you're watching this, you're going, well, Brent, this doesn't make any money. Right, but this sells my SQL Server expertise. People watch this video and they go, oh, I like the way this guy talks. I'll buy his SQL Server training videos. I'll hire him for consulting. Whereas if I just do professional development talks, the market on that is too tough. There are too many people who offer that kind of training and the prices are too low. Like Amazon is full with $10 books on how to work with people and I can't compete with that. I have no interest in doing that. Generally speaking, when I'm working, I want to maximize the dollar amount that I earn per hour. The more that you earn per hour, the less you have to work. And I don't want to work. I work as little as possible. So there you go. Let's see here. Neil says, what will RCSI actually break in production with a third-party app? First, for a third-party app, go talk to the vendor. Ask them, is your application cross-platform? Does it work with Oracle and Postgres? If it does, then it was already tested with RCSI. If it is not, if it's a SQL Server only application, then you just tell them that you want to use RCSI, and that's the end of the discussion. You do not turn it on in a third-party app. You make no changes to third-party app databases. I don't want to get you fired. If anything goes wrong in that third-party app after you turn on RCSI, guess who gets the blame? It ain't me. It's you. I need every viewer I can get. If you lose your job, you'll have lots of time to watch videos. Now I'm conflicted about this answer. Next up, Craig asks, how can I measure busyness by database? I'm looking for something like batch requests per second by database. You can't get it, because think about it. Cross-database queries. How would that be allocated? People will have a default database of TempDB, but then they'll issue fully qualified queries querying against another database, like SelectStar from StackOverflow.dbo.users. Linked server queries. There are all kinds of things in SQL Server that jump across databases. If you want inaccurate numbers, just go make up your own, like our managers do. Next up, Craig asks, at the moment, our web pages call multiple stored procedures, one for each dropdown, one for each list. We're considering making each website or each web page call a single stored proc that returns multiple sets of data. What would you use to test if this is an improvement? Well, Craig, what's the problem you're trying to solve? Whatever the problem you're trying to solve is, measure that metric after and before your change. If the metric you're trying to improve gets better, you made an improvement. If you don't know what metric you're monitoring, put it down. You're just randomly, I wonder if I wrote it in all caps, if things would get better. I wonder if I hooked up the database to nuclear power, if things would get better. Stop wondering. Figure out what the problem is, measure the problem, and then make a hypothesis to solve that problem. Check out the scientific method. It's really powerful. And yes, I'm making fun of you. Vegas Heat asks, what's the sweet spot for free space in Azure SQL DB? The problem my bosses are trying to solve is the price of storage is now our pain point. Some of our databases have free space over a terabyte. I worry about performance. Yeah, up in Azure SQL DB, if you shrink the database files. So now this also depends on, God, you're going to want to watch my faster, cheaper cloud databases talk. My faster, cheaper cloud databases talk, it's if you go into training and then go to mastering server tuning, go to the page IO latch module. It's about, 45 minutes long. I just started, talking as I was like, okay, I'll just recap the whole, oh geez, it's going to take 20 minutes to recap. Go watch that module. In terms of what the sweet space number is, it has nothing to do with free space percentage. It has to do with your performance. If you're willing to accept worse performance, then you can go with smaller file sizes. If you want higher and smaller file sizes and smaller volume sizes is what I also should have said. If you want maximum performance and users are complaining about performance, you may need to grow those, but I wouldn't do that until last resort. And I explain why in that course. So check out the Mastering Server Tuning course. Ooh. I need a sip of my tasty beverage. Let's see. My Tea Got Cold asks, do you often find that basic availability groups meet the high availability and disaster recovery needs of your clients? I struggle to picture picking them instead of FCIs or log shipping. So again, earlier in the video, I mentioned that I've given up production DBA work. So people don't call me for that. I'm with you. In that unless I had standard edition, and especially up in the cloud where failover clustered instances are more challenging, I almost said where they're much harder, but I think they're okay out there now. They're more challenging than they were. That would be the place where I would pick them. I shouldn't even just give any advice at all because I don't do any kind of architecture work for that, and I haven't in several years, and I don't miss that at all. Let's see here. Defense says, hi Brent, I need to prevent that one stored proc takes all the resources of a SQL Server instance. Is there a way in Standard Edition to limit that somehow? No, unfortunately, no. That is an Enterprise Edition feature called Resource Governor. The closest that you have is the setting max DOP to 1, either in that stored procedure or at the database level, but that will not fix memory grant problems or storage problems. In newer versions of SQL Server, there are storage throughput tweaks on Enterprise Edition's Resource Governor. But the thing is, when you do that, you're just dragging out the query to take longer, which means that its locks can take longer. If you have that big of a problem with one specific database, you probably want to isolate it onto its own VM. And then let's see here. One more we'll do for Neil asks, are storage snapshot backups available for SQL VMs in Azure? Yes. Don't you love yes or no questions? Yes. Yes, they are. All right, so we will stop there. There's a good productive morning of answering your SQL Server questions. The sun is coming up here in Las Vegas. Time for me to go figure out which car I'm going to go take to a car show. That's surprisingly hard. Now, half of my cars are ruled out during the summer because they don't have air conditioning. You know, in a 1960s Porsche or a 1990s Honda, the air conditioning, there's no air conditioning or it can't keep up with 100-degree summers out in Vegas. So that leaves me with either the Rolls-Royce Dawn or the Porsche 911 Targa. And I don't know which one I'm going to take. We'll see what happens when we go out to the garage and see what I feel like today. Hope that y'all had fun and off to go make some first world decisions. Adios.